Hello and welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett. This month I'm joined by Ryan of Adapt and Mac Stories and Jason from Upgrade, Liftoff, and Six Colors to talk about the glut of streaming services on the market, including NBC's new Peacock, which has a name that I can't decide if it's really good or really bad. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm proud as a peacock, I guess. Something like that.
Is it a good name or a bad name? What do you think?
I don't have a problem with the name. I have a problem with all the things they tack on the end of it.
I think the name's brilliant. My wife, the other day, I mentioned Peacock, and she's like, oh, is it an NBC thing? And I was like, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
That's good. I mean, I think that's what they want, right? They want you to casually know it's NBC.
But the three different tiers and plus and premium plus or whatever they are, yeah, that's definitely problematic.
Okay, well, let's just jump right into Peacock then, because I installed it on my Apple TV, but that's as far as I've gotten so far. So what are those tiers? What is entailed in them? Do you know?
Well, there's Peacock, which is free. There's a part of the challenge here. So let's just be clear. This is owned by Comcast. So it's the cable company doing a streaming service. And the free tier of Peacock has a base level of stuff with ads, but it doesn't have originals and it doesn't have their sports stuff. I forget exactly what's on there. However, if you're a Comcast subscriber, you get Peacock Premium, which is what I have as a Comcast subscriber. And that is all the stuff that's on the free Peacock, plus extras like their English Premier League, and presumably other sports will go in that package. The Olympics, I think we're going to go in there. And you'll get the original content. Like, they have Brave New World is a show that sort of they stole from Sci-Fi Channel, and there's AP Bio is coming out in September, which is a sitcom they picked off of the network. And it's still with ads, but Comcast subscribers get that for free. Otherwise, it's $5 a month. And then there is the hilariously named Peacock Premium Plus, which is $10 a month or $5 a month if you're a Comcast subscriber. And that is the ad-free version of Peacock Premium, sort of like how Hulu lets you pay extra. And
right.
I do pay it to not see ads.
So multiple tiers, if you're a Comcast subscriber, your pricing is different, better.
Yeah, it's not as confusing, I would argue, as HBO Max, because basically they've got a free to watch with ads, they've got a kind of premium tier that's got special content, and they've got a remove the ads option. And the complexity of being a Comcast subscriber actually isn't as complex as we might have feared, because it really is just you get $5 off, essentially. You get the $5 tier for free, and the $10 tier costs $5 for you if you want to take the ads off. And so it's got complexity in it, but it's not as much of a mess as, like, if I have HBO Go, do I have HBO Now? If I have HBO Now, do I have HBO Max? Who is HBO Max, and where does he live? Stuff like that.
One thing that I don't know if many people sort of realize, and you said it a second ago, is that this is a Comcast venture, right? Comcast owns NBC. That's been true for many years now. Mm-hmm. And I think some people look at this and say, oh, it's an alternative to cable. And I guess in a way it is, but in a way it's also not really an alternative, because you're just paying the cable company. Like, I find that distinction kind of weird.
Well, it's interesting too, just the big companies that are now getting into the streaming wars that, you know, come from a different origin place than, you know, companies like Netflix or Hulu. You've got HBO Max, which is owned by AT&T. And I feel like these giant corporations, you know, they have a goal of obviously dominating in the streaming wars, but they don't seem to know necessarily what exactly do modern day streaming customers want. At least that's my impression. So with HBO Max and Peacock in particular, I feel like they've been really light on originals so far. And to be fair, they're both pretty new. But for me personally, and maybe this isn't the case with, you know, all the other people out there, but for me personally, originals are the most important factor in me subscribing to a streaming service. And so while I do recognize that HBO Max and Peacock both have a ton of content available on them, I don't watch a lot of catalog content. And the things that I do like to watch that are older, you know, I may have purchased them on iTunes a while back, or I own them in some other way. And so, for me, there's just a lot of well, why should I care about this service? Because what's new and great about it? It's mainly a bunch of old stuff. And I'm sure that'll change over time. But for now, it's making neither of those services very compelling for me.
Yeah, I think there's an argument about originals. And I think that this is different people use this stuff differently. Like the Netflix model that everybody's sort of trying to emulate is you've got a catalog and you've got originals. And some people want to binge through old episodes of Friends or The Office, and other people want to watch new stuff. I would argue it's kind of come for the originals, stay for the reruns, is sort of how I'd put it. I have been surprised at how many of these new streaming services have not learned the lesson of Netflix. And like, you look at Apple TV Plus, it's all originals. Like, it's all originals. And I would argue that Apple's originals game is only really, let's see, is better. I'll put it this way. I think Apple's done a better job with originals than either Disney or HBO Max or, so far, Peacock. And I know that that's a big statement, but like, Disney has, you know, a handful of things, but I would say other than The Mandalorian, for me at least, I find nothing super compelling. They've got some behind the scenes kind of Disney propaganda stuff, which is fun, but it's lightweight. HBO Max's original stuff has been pretty limited so far. And NBC's or Peacock's stuff is super limited so far. Whereas Apple, you know, has not had, they don't have the catalog, but they've got the originals. And I think that their originals game has been pretty solid. So in the long run, I mean, CBS All Access does a good job with their originals. There are examples of other sites or other services that do well with their originals, but I am kind of fascinated by that because I agree with Ryan. Like, you know, for me, it is about the originals, and then the catalog is also a nice thing to have. And it's not like I don't watch catalog content, but I you know, my motivator to turn a service on or off is generally about some original that I need to see.
And I think for me personally, I tend to turn services on and off way more frequently than I think those services would like me to. I know generally, I'm sure these companies would prefer that you subscribe and then, you know, not that they want you to forget about it, but if you do forget about it and you're still paying them every month, that's not that bad of a problem to have. And I'm pretty aggressive about it. You know, am I watching enough content right now on the service that I want to keep paying for it? And if not, then it's gone. And so from month to month, I've got, you know, two, maybe three services that I'm subscribing to. But, you know, at the same time, I'm kind of keeping an eye on the other options out there and seeing, oh, okay, that's an interesting show. The next time I subscribe to that service, I want to watch it. And once there's enough content that it makes it, you know, worthwhile to subscribe again, then I'll do that for a month or so. I don't think that's the way that, you know, the companies, the big streaming giants want customers to operate. But that's kind of been my habit in terms of how I handle streaming services.
Do you think something like Peacock or other streaming services owned by, you know, big content companies that also have a TV network or multiple TV networks to run, do you think the lack of good original content on the streaming services is because they are still mostly a traditional TV content business and they haven't really made their way to having those things online only, whereas opposed to Apple doesn't have a TV network starting from scratch? They had no option but to do originals. Do you think that's a factor?
I don't know. I think originals are really expensive. I say it would be a factor in the sense that they're probably figuring they can get by on their catalog to a certain degree. I have less of a explanation for it for Disney, which seemed to have years where they were planning to launch this thing, than I do for HBO Max and for Peacock, where they really scrambled. This was sort of done in a very short amount of time because they realized the writing was on the wall. So I'm not surprised their originals game isn't as strong out of the box. I am a little surprised that Disney Plus has not done as much as I expect for them to do. And again, I know there's stuff on there that's not The Mandalorian. It's just that it seemed a little light to me. So I think it has to do a little bit with timing and a little bit with thinking that the catalog is what matters. And to a certain degree, the catalog does matter. I just think in the long run, if you want people to consider your service, the way you make news with services is releasing originals, right? Like that's how there's news about any streaming service, is there's a new show, not there's a rerun, right? So I think in the long run, they all have to capitalize on original material to get people to consider. And then again, like I said, come for the originals, stay for the catalog.
I think one advantage that these companies with, you know, legacy kind of history have is that they aren't just looking at things from the let's copy Netflix standpoint. I think it was maybe on Upgrade recently where, Jason, you were talking about how on Peacock they have this kind of channels feature where there's just constantly playing content from, you know, things like The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon or The Office and other sources. And that's a really nice kind of old TV feature that you don't really get in the streaming age. And as long as new streaming companies are just trying to copy Netflix because Netflix is wildly successful, then, you know, there's some of that that's lost. And so there are some valuable things to be learned from the old TV age. And, you know, one in particular that is really important to me, and I'm not really pleased with the outlook right now for the streaming wars going forward, is the idea of aggregation. I mean, I love that we can break the bundle and we can kind of choose our own a la carte, different services we want to subscribe to at different times. But there really aren't many people who are trying to aggregate content from different services, put it in one place, and give you one interface for, you know, keeping track of all the different shows you're watching, all the different content that's available to you. And that's something that I wish more companies were trying to do, because that was a nice part of the old TV style, is, you know, you've got one DVR or, you know, cable box or whatever that it is, and it's got a guide on it and you can see everything on there. Now you've got a bunch of different apps, and oh, which app do I open to, you know, watch this show? Which app has which movies? Like, it's really confusing. And so, you know, Apple is trying to do this with its TV app. Amazon is trying to do this with its channels initiative in Prime Video, but there's really not a lot of other options when it comes to people aggregating. And the people who are trying to do it aren't necessarily being super successful, because understandably, no streaming services want people to go through these other companies' apps. They want them to come to their own app so they can get all the data from customers directly and have a more direct relationship. So it's understandable from the streaming services standpoint that they don't want to be aggregated. But at the same time, from a customer standpoint, the customer experience, I think, is, you know, not quite as good in some respects as what it used to be in kind of the older cable era.
And there's definitely some frustration, too, just about the idea that, you know, the information is there, but there's no good way to get at it. I use Just Watch a lot, which is a website and also an app that will tell you where something is, and is it on a streaming service? Is it available for rent? At what resolution? SD, HD, 4K? I use that all the time, and it's great, but, you know, it's absolutely true. What I really want is to, when I'm sitting down at the Apple TV especially, to put in the name of a show and feel like I have some certainty that it's going to tell me where I can find that show or that movie. And the truth is, because the data sources aren't complete, I can't rely on that. You know, I don't want to rent a movie for $4 that's on a service I subscribe to, right? That's stupid. And it's very frustrating that, and I'm with you. I get why. Well, this is one of those things where it's a company's customer hostile behavior, because they want to control the customer. And I think that it's something that they're all going to have to get over, but Netflix especially has to get over it, which is the idea that you never want your customers to ever use anything but your streaming service. And you just kind of have to get over that and say, we want our people to be able to find our stuff wherever they are, and we'll prove our usefulness in their entertainment budget by competing and winning on having what they want to see. And right now, Netflix seems to be much more of the opinion that they just don't want, you know, it's not like they don't share some of that information, but like, that's a good example where I think they're more hostile. Their limitations on Apple TV especially are kind of user hostile. We should also talk about the other kind of hostility that's going on here, which is HBO Max and Peacock aren't on Amazon Fire Sticks or on Roku devices right now. And that is similarly a consumer hostile showdown between companies that want a bigger piece of the pie. before they'll let people see. It's very, very much like those old cable carriage disputes where like CBS disappears from your cable for a week or two while the companies are arguing about who's going to pay who. And in the end, it's the, you know, they're using their customers, their joint customers as pawns in this game. And I just, it's a bad look. And, you know, you should be able to stand by your product and stand or fall based on the quality of it without trying to manipulate it so that people can't get to your information without going through hoops. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I had to start, you know, mourning a little bit recently about the fact that, you know, I use the Apple TV app, which I know lots of people have a lot of issues with. Jason, I've heard you talk about a lot of issues that you have with it in the past. I like it generally. I recognize that it's not set up well for most people. It's confusing. You know, it's not clear, first of all, where Apple TV Plus is, and second of all, which content you have access to immediately and which you have to pay for, subscribe to something for, et cetera. But I use that app because I like having things aggregated. And so Netflix is the one big exception here where there's, you can search for Netflix shows inside it, but you can't add any of them to your Up Next queue or anything like that. But just recently, I kind of came to the realization after all these new streaming services have debuted, and none of them have become channels inside the Apple TV app. Because, you know, about a year ago, Apple announced that it was going to do this channels initiative, which is a lot like what Amazon is doing in Prime Video, where you can subscribe for a particular service inside the TV app, and you can actually watch the content in the TV app without leaving it, without being bumped out to a separate third-party app. And there's a number of kind of points that Apple made about, you know, when you sign up for a channel, then you get a top-tier experience in these ways, such as you get built-in support for family sharing, you get the ability to download that content offline, you get, you know, really easy ways to sign up and cancel your subscriptions. Channels content uses the default kind of media player on the Apple TV, the device, and then, you know, mobile devices, iPhones, iPads. And so there's a lot of great things for myself as I've been using channels over the past year that I love about it. And if every service could be a channel in the TV app, then it would just be, for me at least, this near perfect modern streaming TV experience. And yet now that Peacock is out and it's not a channel, Disney Plus is out and it's not a channel. And then the real killer was HBO Max, which HBO used to be a channel in Apple's TV app. And when it switched over to HBO Max, they took that away. So now the what was the most important, you know, partner that Apple had has left the channels initiative. And with all these services, you know, Apple has done a good job at striking deals where these services do still integrate with the TV app. So as long as you have the HBO Max app installed, the Disney Plus app, Peacock app, then you can track all the content that you watch from those services inside the Up Next queue. So functionally, it still retains lots of what's valuable about the TV app. But there are all these other niceties that provided a consistent experience so that no matter what I'm watching from whatever service, I knew that I could count on a quality experience. And now I recognize that that dream of having that kind of experience may never happen because, you know, Apple kind of took a shot at it and it started out okay. But now that all the big streamers are out there and none of them are on board, I'm realizing, oh man, I'm never gonna get that dream, that vision of what TV viewing could be in a kind of streamlined, aggregated way. And I hope that I'm wrong, and I hope that at some point Apple or some other company is able to do something to find success in this area. But right now it's not looking great.
Yeah, I'm kind of okay with the idea that that not everything needs to be a channel, but I feel like everything needs to be in the database of whatever device you're using. And, you know, Apple TV is what I use to watch most streaming stuff, but whatever your streaming device is, I just want all program data to live in one place, right? I'm okay kicking out all the other stuff to Netflix or whoever. But, you know, we really do need to get to a point where everybody is putting their shared database in one place, you know, or letting it be aggregated by a search engine or something so that I can have a single interface for everything. And the challenge right now is getting is sharing that information back with the interface. And that seems to be the impediment with Netflix, is that Netflix doesn't want to share viewing data with Apple, which I understand, but it means that your behavior on Netflix cannot ever be indicated in the TV app, which makes it way less useful. And that's the frustration that I have with it. I think channels are super convenient, but at the same time, I also get the, if you're a provider and you're building an app, I get the idea that you're building your own app experience. And like Peacock channels, like how does that work in Apple TV? Like, does Apple, if they want to offer live streaming channels, how do you display that if Apple owns your interface? Because you probably have to kick them back out to the app anyway at that point. And what all you're really doing is giving Apple a cut of your monthly subscription fee, which I understand why they'd also be wary of. It feels like some of this stuff is going to get solved eventually over time, because the consumers are going to get grounded down. But right now it's a land rush. And I think that makes everybody less likely to play ball with everybody else. And unfortunately, we as viewers lose.
Yeah, being ground down definitely is a feeling that I have when I look at these services. Just sort of the overwhelming nature of they all work a little bit differently. I'm not sure about what content is where. And there are third-party ways to get around it. But I really like the idea of Apple TV or Roku or wherever having some sort of database so they can see into all of these apps and not necessarily making that like a content business deal like it is now, because those businesses don't want to play with Apple, right? They're fine being out on their own, but it does leave customers sort of in between these islands, and we kind of have to hop around looking for what we want. So what are you guys currently subscribed to? Ryan, you said that you changed that a bunch over time. What has stuck around for you right now?
Yeah, so the one service that I'm almost always subscribed to is Hulu. And that may change because, you know, more and more kind of traditional TV content is going to move elsewhere, such as to Peacock. There are a lot of NBC comedies that I've enjoyed watching through Hulu, and most of those are going to transition at least at some point. But Hulu is a mainstay, especially recently they added FX content after Disney acquired Fox. And while I don't quite understand why all of the FX content has to be branded FX on Hulu versus just calling it a Hulu original, because I feel like Hulu is a stronger brand than FX. That's a little nitpick that I have. But there's a lot of good originals that come out through Hulu. And so I'm subscribed to that most of the time. Right now I've got Apple TV Plus, partly because I got a free year for buying an iPhone last year, but also because I really have enjoyed the originals. I've watched a fair amount of the TV Plus content, and I do think Apple's doing a pretty good job with it. There haven't been any kind of runaway hits at this point. I'm sure they will be at some point, but I think they're generally making good quality content. And then another service that I just recently subscribed to is Showtime, because my wife and I started getting into Billions. And so, you know, I feel a little unsure about subscribing to a service just for one show, but we're kind of hooked on it at the moment. So that's okay. And like I said, my rule is like 2 to 3 services. And since I'm not paying for TV Plus right now, I'm only paying for Hulu, then Showtime's okay. But, you know, the other kind of regular services that are in the rotation are Netflix, of course. Sometimes CBS All Access. It's been a while since I subscribed to that. HBO for sure. Although with HBO Max, I feel like even though now I'm getting more content than I would have before, because everything is just more diluted with so much non-HBO content inside HBO Max, that service has been less appealing to me. But the next time there's some great HBO shows that, you know, debut that I want to watch, I'm sure I'll resubscribe to that. Peacock I haven't subscribed to yet because the slate of originals doesn't seem all that compelling at this point, but I'm sure that'll be in the rotation in the future as well.
I have subscribed to everything, so you're welcome. but I want to second Ryan's praise for Hulu. I feel like Hulu is killing it right now. honestly. And in the quarantine era, I have watched more on Hulu than anywhere else. And it's a combination of some good catalog material. See, look, I watch things from the catalog, but also some great originals. And yeah, the FXX on Hulu deal, for people who don't know the behind the scenes, the idea there is that since Disney owns FX and Disney owns Hulu now, and what they decided to do was get the programmers at FX who have just done a great job. John Landgraf is the guy who's in charge of the FX cable networks, and their originals are amazing. And they were given money to make more of them and put them on Hulu, essentially, which is an interesting model where they're kind of keeping the FX branding, but debuting on Hulu. And the first one of those was Devs, and it looks gorgeous. It's the ending is kind of stupid, but it's just they gave Alex Garland a lot of money to make an 8-hour miniseries as a follow-up to his movie Ex Machina. And it's like, yes, more like this. They've done some really good stuff. And they get the FX catalog, which has got some amazing stuff. So like What We Do in the Shadows, which is maybe my favorite show on the air right now. Those episodes were popping up the next day on Hulu after they ran on FX. So I think FX is worth a look because they do have a really good catalog and some good original material that you may not have seen, whether it's original to Hulu or whether it's FX stuff that also immediately goes on Hulu. So, you know, I there are other services that I use. CBS All Access, when there's a new Star Trek show, I'm definitely there for that. HBO has gotten its hooks into me, and that's fine. And I get Peacock for free. Yay. So, but I wanted to plug Hulu again because I feel like Hulu is doing a great job and it gets missed between, you know, your Netflixes and your Amazon Prime Videos. But I've watched a little bit of Netflix in the quarantine, almost no Amazon Prime Video, and lots and lots of Hulu.
Yeah, I guess Amazon Prime Video is another one. That's the one I never think about because it's just part of Amazon Prime. And occasionally I'll watch things on there. It depends on what's coming out. Like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I think, is the last thing that we watched on Amazon Prime. But it's nice to have it thrown in. You know, why not?
Cool. Well, I appreciate you all putting the remotes down and taking time to talk with me. Where can people find you online?
I'm not online. I'm just on the TV now.
Just on TV?
Okay. I'm just sixcolors.com.
But the TV is online now,
that's true.
Jason.
Actually, you can go to theincomparable.com and you'll hear me talking about TV shows a lot over there. And sixcolors.com for my tech writing and, of course, my podcast at Relay FM, Upgrade and Liftoff. Woo!
And I'm writing at macstories.net, podcasting on Adapt here on Relay, which is a show all about the iPad. So if you like iPad, check out Adapt.
Thank you for joining me. Thank you, members, for your support of Relay FM. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next month.